The Future of Teamwork is a Huddle 3 production for Leader. Subscribe today and never miss an episode. Welcome to The Future of Teamwork, the show where we explore fresh perspectives and practical ideas to help leaders build healthier, more resilient, high-performing teams. Today's episode is part of a special five-part Leader Lab series, and we're doing something a little different. As you listen, we'll invite you to step into the shoes of our guests by reflecting on 7 real-world leadership challenges. It's a chance to compare your thinking to theirs and learn something new about your own leadership style along the way. To help you go deeper, we've included a brand new leadership development exercise in the show notes. It's called How Do You Leader? And it's a short set of reflective prompts you can work through on your own or with your team. Think of it as a leadership workout designed to stretch your thinking and strengthen your impact. Now, let's get into it. In this episode, we're joined by David Bergeron, Chief Operating Officer of Everybody Fights. David brings an inspiring story of resilience, servant leadership, and team building, lessons forged through the highs and lows of leading teams in a fast-changing fitness industry. From navigating post-pandemic challenges to scaling a team from a handful of trainers to a thriving national operation, David shares how leading with empathy, adaptability, and a clear sense of purpose helped him build not just stronger teams, but stronger bonds along the way. If you're navigating change, mentoring teammates through tough seasons, or working to foster stronger bonds under pressure, this is a conversation you'll connect with. And don't forget, all the resources, including the How Do You Leader exercise, are in the show notes. Let's dive into episode 3 of the Future of Teamwork Leader Lab series, Leading Through Chaos and Change. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. I'm your host, Dane Grunewald, and today we're diving into the Leader Lab format. We're joined by David Bergeron, and David's the COO of Everybody Fights, which is just the coolest of boxing and fitness and wellness concepts all combined. And it's going to be great to learn from David here. So welcome, David.
Thank you very much. I'm pumped to kind of be on this today and share my stories and my experiences.
Well, let's jump right in. So what were some of your early teamwork influences in life?
My early ones always come back to sport. It started off with like kind of an approach with friends and mentors, like kind of hanging on to that aspect of, you know, friends kind of supporting each other, mentoring each other, and bringing each other through different scenarios. And when I was in middle school and high school, like that was like my first kind of leadership of teamwork. And I think a lot of people think of teamwork and they're like, oh, it only involves like a group of people kind of working together. But oftentimes where teamwork is, to me, it can be anywhere more than one plus, so two people and onward, right? And so my first part to that was just this thought process of people just choosing not to have gain to help me, support me, but not in a way to like that they're going to have any gain in that direction. And that was the first piece of me understanding, like in seventh grade, sixth grade, of that aspect of like teamwork and developing. And it came down to this place of that in my life, I just carried it forward in that same way. It was like, all right, so there's value in being kind. There's value in helping people out when there's nothing you're going to benefit from it. And it seems like everybody could use a hug. Like that was my other thing I always kind of laughed about. But like everybody could use a hug and a little bit of love, a little bit of support, right? And that was like the value of teamwork early on in my career turning into a young man, right?
Yeah.
And then that breaches out into sport and, you know, going into high school sports and other things in nature where that you got comfortable with 1, 2, 3, 4 people, right? But then you got more comfortable with larger groups and you figured out where you sat in that group, which was interesting, right? It's like, you know, I often have fun and I'll watch, I used to watch National Geographic all the time and I love watching lions and I love watching wolves and,
yeah,
you know, identifying leaders and everything that, like, and it's true, like leaders aren't just, you can't pick yourself to be a leader. You really can't. It's like your group picks you. And there's times where I've seen, you know, and coaches pick out captains because they're seniors, but they weren't the leader on the team. There was unspoken leaders that kind of had to shift or move or do certain things in that direction. And that's what I love about animals. And I always try to remind people we're animals.
Yeah.
Because we always like to forget we're above that food chain or not even inclusive to that food chain. And so it's like, I always go back and say, we're animals, like we are. And so within our instincts, like there's certain one of us that are followers, there's certain one of us that are leaders. There's other people that are like, that want to be leaders and they love that high, but they're not ready for it from like a chaos perspective. Like great leaders understand chaos and what is and what isn't.
I love that. And leading through chaos is becoming more and more of a thing in the times that we live in as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny. You and I chatted about Dan Martell like earlier in the week last week. And, you know, he talks about that in like chapter 5 about certain types of individuals that grow up in their childhood that have rough upbringings turn into very interesting entrepreneurs or interesting employees that handle chaos better than anybody else because of when they were young, they didn't have a choice. They just did it. Right. Yeah. They did it and they had to survive. And it was very minute compared to a lot of things in this world. But like, that's what I love about it. Like you can tell somebody's story when you're hiring a new employee and you're doing that like self-assessment to see where they fit in the demographic of the blocks to understand who they are. You can really start to see like, oh, I'm very interested in understanding about this person and about their upbringing and really what made them who they are today. Because it wasn't necessarily school, right? It was the environment that they grew up in and they chose to survive in.
Absolutely. Story is a big part of a lot of the frameworks that we've been playing with and experiencing through the show. And it's amazing just how, going back to your point earlier, like as humans, we're still animals. We still have a certain way of being. And story's been so much of a part of that way of us getting together as groups of people and as teams over history.
Yeah. And there's so many books that really kind of tell a lot of stories. But have you ever read Sapiens?
Yes. Brilliant.
That's a brilliant book that actually talks about the capable human mind at one point to be able to use imagination to tell story.
Yeah.
And that's what really set us apart, right? As like that animal versus anything else. Other people will talk about it as fire and other inventions. But realistically, what set us apart was this ability to develop a story in our heads and to tell a story to other people to make them believe and to enrich our minds in that category. That was the huge breaking point for humankind in general.
Yeah, I'd quite forgotten that. I know that also Jane Goodall, who was down there studying all the gorillas in Africa in the 60s, she was on Adam Grant's podcast and she was saying, again, just like you've stated, by being able to use a story to learn, we've been able to just leap ahead as humankind, where other animals can only learn from something that's actually happening right there in the physical space and place.
Yeah, it's in that impact, right? It's like, hey, I can show you this when it's happening, but I can't actually do anything of like, hey, we're going to read and, you know, it's not like the Jungle Book where they're talking about like X, Y, and Z. It's not like that in the real world of animals.
That's it. Well, we'll use that use case in a minute when we dive into the hypothetical. But before we do that, my next question's, tell me about a big achievement that you've navigated with a team. What's something that's just driven you to a great point of pride with the team?
I think my biggest point of pride that I have is the ability of our team in 2021 to come back post COVID, and to essentially look like some of my closer friends right in the eyes and have some hard conversations about like, hey, you're not going to make what we want to make right now. And I can't promise you it's going to be in a year, but I can promise you this. This is going to be tough. And we're going to have to deal with people being sick. We're going to have to deal with our loved ones not enjoying us, being gone. This is a time for sacrifice. This is a time to write your name in the stars. Yeah. You know, across the legends of when fitness, and in terms of the entire United States, maybe the world, right, looked at digital as the new way. And that's, you know, we were dumping $250 million into Peloton raise, and then Tonal came on board and all these other companies came on board, and they were like, gyms are never going to be around again. And I was like, hedged my bets. And I said, hey guys, like we have nothing. We have nothing. We're in massive debt.
Scary.
For 2 years, and we have to work our way out of that. And there's going to be challenging. We have to renew leases, and we have to, by the way, build a membership all over again, build a following. most of these people left Boston, right? And, you know, typical person in Boston or in really any major city, what's around for 15 months, maybe 2 years for the demographic that I play in. But like, we were able to build a team from 3 to roughly about 50 people in a course of about, I would say, 3 to 4 months of really digging in. And it's training all these people and developing them and getting them on board with the same mindset to want to sacrifice, to want to dig deeper, to do these things, and always putting our member first. And I talked about like giving people hugs and being kind and all that, really challenging when you have a mask on, you're mandated to stand 12 feet away from people, but you got to show love in some kind of function. And that piece, you know, I will say my entire leadership team, you know, we believe in servant leadership, came together and we said, we're going to do this and we're just going to press forward. And when we're having tough times, we're going to allow like complete vent sessions and just call me, vent, share all the things you want to do, but keep it to me. Don't go ahead and destroy yourself in any other category. Like, I can handle it. Let's play the game.
Yes.
And so that was like a big thing. And now I sit back, it's, you know, 2024 is over, 2025 is onward, right? We've completely handled all the things that we want to do. We've built our team to now 80 to 90 people. We have a very successful 2 locations with about 6 licensed deals across the country. And we're now in the phase of positivity and growth. And we're having fun now.
Yeah.
Now we're layering and building the org chart, right? We're building the leaders and the development between like what is. We're able to implement EOS. We're able to implement all of these things that you really couldn't do when you're just in chaos. Like, you're just like, all right, what's the next fire that needs to put out? Let's do it. And let's do it as a team. Let's get a smile on our face and let's find a way. Like, you can't do that like all the time. And I think I credit this to this thought process of like servant leadership, because I don't think we could have done this if not everybody in the pool was doing the exact same thing. And it's in times when chaos is, you have to be able to willing to do any job that's sitting in front of you. And that's been taught to me over and over and over again through my life, right? That servant leadership ultimately is the goal of what we do. And so like that to me is like an example of a time coming out of that situation of building a crew that just like understood the same thing, same goal, really understood their North Star and dug into it. And did it without too much complaining, because like there could have been.
I can't imagine.
I remember looking at one of my close buddies at the time who we'd have 6 or 7 call outs due to COVID for 10-day stretches. And I was like, well, we're down to like 6 trainers and there's 30 classes that need to be covered over the next 3 days. Like, how do you want to divide and conquer this between the two of us? And I was like, the thought of that now almost makes my skin peel. But at that moment it was like, nope, we got it. We'll figure it out. Like, let's do this and play that game. And I couldn't be more grateful for the moment. Right. But at the same point, it's like, I'm very happy it's behind me.
Yeah.
You know, but you're grateful for that moment and that experience in that situation.
It's such a good example, David. And, it kind of ties into that epiphany effect that when we come together to learn or to fight through, particularly with, you know, Everybody Fights being the name of your business, that fighting through something together just creates this common bond. You don't have to be fighting every day, but once you come through one of those moments, you're just stronger for it.
Yeah, and I think that's like that point, though, is so key, right? When you come together, you remember like the game Red Robe, Red Rover?
Yeah.
All right, so great game, and I love that game so well. And it's like, but that is a great example of teamwork, right? You can't break us if we choose to trust each other and hold strong. Like, you can't break us. You can take your biggest, strongest, baddest person as fast as you possibly can. You can't break us, even if they go for the weakest link.
Yeah.
And I think that's like an old school game. Like, Mad Dog is another one for the rugby world, right? When that's like, that's, but it, I think these things are like, and I always come back to it. It's like, I said, it's like, trust me, if you stay with me, and you know, as I told everybody, if you trust me and stay with me, I will fight right to the end and we will be successful. Because I always say, like, I will carry this thing on my back if I need to.
Yeah.
Like, I will. And that's always been my mentality. It's like, if I need to, this is what I'll do. And I am content on doing it, because I'm promising you at the end of the day, I don't want to do what was I had to do in the back half of 2019, early 2020, which was lay off 200 and something in people 2 or 3 times. And I was like, that was the worst experience that I remember looking at my wife and just like in full blown tears,
yeah.
Like phone call after phone call after phone call, like scheduled 10-hour days of it. And I was just like, I just can't do this anymore. And it was like, then you look at this and where it is right now. And I'm like, wow, like that's the difference of sticking to it. That's a difference of being consistent. And that is a difference of like, you know, being a leader that doesn't complain about the situation, but just digs in and says like, all right, I see light and we can go after this. And it's like, I was back to referrals of like understanding, you know, it's like piggy ball in rugby, right? As a seven, you see that pocket, you got 4 or 5 yards, you take that pitch out and you run as hard as you can. There's no dancing.
No.
You hit that small little daylight and create ruckus. And if you're getting captured, you drop and you push the ball out as fast as you can to protect yourself, right? And that's, I go back and I look at that in life. Like, it's like, you see the light, we're going to hit it until we find an issue. I want you to drop, present the ball, trust somebody else on your team to guard you, keep you safe and protect that egg, you know, at the end of the day. And that's like, we go back and talk about that rugby mentality coming back into business. And that's like, I was talking to my team. I was like, there's a hole somewhere in here. You guys don't see it.
Just got to keep punching.
We just got to keep punching. Somebody's going to give up. Somebody's not going to be able to understand what we do. And if we're consistent and we don't give up on the other end,
yeah,
the other side will cave. The other side will cave.
Yeah. No, I think it's brilliant. I also like the way you touched there, David, on the vent sessions with your team. Like, it's tough. Don't go and put your pain from the workday on a family member or a colleague. Call me. One of my good friends and author of this book behind me here, Wrong Fit, Right Fit, Dr. Andre Martin, he had this great quote there from his research, which is, a leader's role is to import stress and export civility. And that's what it sounds like you were doing a lot of the time with your team in that rebuild out of the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I always go back to it. I'm a good buddy from Life is Good that always says to me, he goes, people need to feel seen, heard, and understood always.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a leader, that is your job, to make sure people feel seen when you walk into the space, make sure they always feel heard, and make sure they always can find you and have time and be understood how they are. It doesn't mean they're right. It doesn't mean that you're going to agree with them and the organization's going to be changed, but they need to be understood.
Yeah.
And I took that, we did like an offsite with them to probably 2018. And I saw the light after that. And I was like, that with that little piece right there just changed how I looked at everything and how I approached my meetings, how I approached like everything. I'm like, all right, I can't walk out of here without making sure you all three of those are checked off.
Yeah, I love that one. And people will just bring a whole bunch of extra effort. Once they're seen, heard, and understood, they're like, they're in for the fight. They're gonna share things with you that they might have been afraid to before. It's a huge unlock.
And it's funny, like, you know, you and I had that conversation. We talked about being enriched and just energized post combo.
Yeah.
That's a huge goal of mine in every one of my combos, right? In whether it's a tough combo, easy combo, whatever it is, when I'm talking to somebody, one of my jobs as a human is to motivate and to kind of draw people's best out of them, draw their best out of them. And the only way we have the one, you have to like, teach them to have falsified confidence in certain areas and needed to stroke their ego at times. Sometimes you have to pull the ego down, but ultimately what you're trying to do is put them in the best place to go and achieve what they're trying to achieve in their goal.
Yeah.
Not necessarily yours, but like theirs. Like if their goal is going to in line with all the things that you want to go and do, but like hear them out, see what they need to do, and then help them. Like help them get to that place for success. And sometimes it's chopping tough stuff off the top, and sometimes it's lifting them up, right?
Yeah.
You, as a leader, you got to know what tools need to be brought in from the shed.
Yeah. And if you practice that well, then your team start to follow in some of those behaviors as well. So now it's not just you doing it. Others are lifting each other up or, you know, curbing.
and that's what you hope, right? And that's a hope. And like my number one goal, staff and members wise, is to make them the best version of themselves. And the minute they walk in the door, continuously create growth for them across the channel until they're leaving us. And I hope they never leave us, but at the same point, like that's life.
Yeah.
You're never stuck in the same situation. You know, they're going to move on in one way or another. And I'm never sad by it. I'm actually excited, whether it's staff or members. I'm excited for you. Like, this is an awesome growth opportunity for you. This is great. And they're always coming to me like, hey, bad news. And I'm like, about what? About what? Like it's that is like the coolest thing. And it's like, and that thing I always find kind of weird in corporate America too is like you go to your boss and you're having there's like that contentious kind of feeling. Yeah. Like, why are you not excited for this person?
Yeah.
Like, unless they're leaving you completely high and dry, which you should not even show them anyways, you should be massively excited.
I agree. That's a great segue into my next question, which is, David, as you consider your experience with teamwork and navigating some of those big achievements, what would you say your philosophies are around teamwork?
I think my number one philosophy always comes back to, like, I always go back to that thought process of servant leadership.
Yep.
And that's like my number one thing. I like to go ahead and say, like, I think this was like a movie that Justin Timberlake was in, and he used to like say, like, I removed my doors, the CEO of GQ, I think he was.
Right.
And he removed his door and said, my door's always open.
Yeah.
And I've always said that about myself. My door is always open. But I've always said, like, the key piece of like where my leadership comes into play is that I am no different than you. I put on my shoes the same way you do. I teach classes the same way you do. I will personal train the same way you do. And I'll continue to do that until I can't do that. But I also believe that I should not be running a business that I can't also do myself. So every aspect of my business, I can step in and do, but definitely not as good as the employee that's hired to do that job, which, by the way, should be that way.
Yes.
But if I have to, I should jump in and be the janitor, and I should have no problems with it. If I have to jump in and work the front desk and take phone calls, I should have no problem with it.
Yeah.
I know that I'm not doing it at the tier or the level that that person is, but I think that's honestly my philosophy in leadership. Is to support your team as if you're one of the team and not just the leader. And when we go back to talking about like wolf packs, and we go back to talking about these different things, you think like the leader is not at the front. The alpha is not at the front. He's at the back, and he's supporting everybody that's necessary. He's the last one that falls asleep. He's the last one that gets to rest. You know, those are the things that I constantly go back and look at. I'm not saying I'm a wolf or an alpha or any of these other categories,
yeah.
But I do like love the animal instinct aspect of these different pieces that make, you know, people really understand loyalty, that really understand this process of trusting a leader to bring them to the promised land or to wherever it is they're trying to go, putting faith and trust, because they're just not sitting on a beach somewhere relaxing while you're working 15 hours a day nonstop. And that I'll always get behind.
That's what I really enjoyed in our first conversation, David, which was when you described the way you kind of turned the industry on its head a little bit with how much you serve the trainers. And you stood them up as influencers, and you gave them a different cut of the economics. So maybe you can expand a little bit on your approach there.
Yeah, I think my big approach when, 10, 11 years ago now was I took a look at the industry from 10 years of experience working for two major companies at that time. And I saw what I liked about it. And I saw the pain points of being an employee within that organization. And I saw there was room in certain areas. And I think one of the things I go back and talk about trainers are the key to a lot of things, right? Good talent is, we talk about that. And so trainers are so talented at what they do and what they're capable of doing. They hold on to retention of a lot of your clientele. So if you have quality trainers that are in there working, but if you're only paying them $25 a session out of like $120 payout like that their client is paying them, that was what I was getting paid back in a day. And that was what a lot of trainers were. And you had to really get to a place of doing 25 sessions in a week to hit a bonus mark. And you got like another $8 an hour. And I said to myself, like, so 25 sessions in a course of a week, right, is a lot of sessions.
Yeah.
And you're like, in my head when I first started, it was like the thought process of like, well, it's not 40 hours, so it's like whatever. But you're really, for every session, it's like an hour and a half worth of work. And then there's got to be there's half hour gaps everywhere, hour gaps everywhere. So your day is like 18 hours long just to achieve 5 days a week at 25 sessions. And what I realized is that the industry failed on making sure that you could have a full-time gig and maintain this in fitness. It was really, it failed us in that way. And I wanted to find a solve for that. And I felt like if I found a solve for that, I would have people that wanted to move from the financing background or working for Deloitte or these huge companies that they were just being cannibalized in all these ways, right? They're used and spit out after 2.5 years and give them opportunity to use their skill set, right? You're in finance. All right, cool. Like maybe I can have you in our department of our financing team to help us run reporting and payroll and X, Y, and Z, teach you skill sets because you have the foundation, right? I don't have to teach you pivot tables. I don't have to teach you any of that stuff. Like we can really get some foundation, but also meanwhile, let's go ahead and make sure you get paid really well and you can fill the cracks with personal training. You can
fit, so clever.
Like, yeah. And then from that side on the personal training side, I also then said to myself, like, all right, if we can develop these guys to teach our classes, you know, these are the people that are the most knowledgeable. And then we started to come that was my thought process of behind it all. And then I just removed from a membership side. I was like, all these companies around the world are charging $150 to $500 sign-on fee right at the point of view. And I'm like, but what? Like, so somebody to literally sit on the other side and fill out a piece of paper and they're filling out a sign. I was like baffled by it. I was like, throw that out the window. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. And then I said to myself, I'm like, all right, let's do it month to month. I hate everything. And we could all raise our hands when we're dealing with our Wi-Fi, our Verizon bill, anything. And they're like, hey, you can sign up for a 2-year deal to get this. And you're just like, oh man, like, I don't want to be stuck to something. I don't know where I'm going to be in 2 years. And so I just said, let's do month to month and let's eliminate those first two things. Let's add flexibility on freeze options for people to hold on to a specialized rate. Let's really take care of the people in that way so that we take care of the consumer coming in, making this sure they feel loved and part of the community. Yeah. And like favors are always being supportive of that. I was like, I always tell my sales team, it's like, or my customer service team, should feel like your best friends come and ask you for a favor all the time and you're able to hook them up. Like you're able to hook them up. And that's what it should always feel like. But we're actually just following process and procedure, right? You're just doing what is necessary. And that's our code of ethics of that. But then you get to the trainer side. And I said, how do you make sure you can feed them? And it was like, if they're going and grabbing their personal training clients and they're able to go and get that done, I want to give them 60%, 70% cuts. Like I want to give them, I'm not looking to make money from them.
Yeah.
I want you in my four walls. And I don't want anybody else to go and poach you because I want you to go ahead and say, like, I train everybody fights. It's one of the best gyms I can get into. And by the way, like, they care about me. Like, I'm just not the spoke on the wheel or a cog in the whole system. I am actually like a person that makes a difference. And when I sit down and have a conversation with Dave or head trainers or anybody of leadership, and I say, hey, I'd really like a new trap bar and this is my why. And they'll take a look at it. Like, sounds good, man. We'll put an order in for you next week and kind of get it done for you. And like somebody needs something, we'll sit down and have the conversation. We're all sitting like, this works for me. Like, why don't you present it? Why don't you draw up a presentation of why it would be valuable and the return on value? And let's educate you in this process. Because if you came to me and did this and you showed, like, I believe this is going to have a return on value by you spending $1,000 going to give us this. What are your thoughts? Fucking roll.
Yeah.
And, I shared that to you. It's like, that's how I got my start from a trainer that next phase of like a sales manager to an AGM to a GM back in the day, is drawing up a memorandum and giving it to the owner of the company of 27 locations. And I said, you had to take that step to like make that choice.
It's a cool story. And I love seeing when I go on LinkedIn, for example, just the breadth of professionals that you've got in there as trainers. And they're all like, hey, I'm a trainer at Everybody Fights. It just stands out. It pops.
Yeah. And it's so cool. It's like I have so much love for our team, and I look at the quality of staff and the diversity of that staff, and how they can just come together and be one. And that is really kind of the most unique things in that I've ever experienced. Like most of the people that I surround ourselves with are not like, I would never have found myself being like, I'm going to hang out with that person. That person's going to be my best friend. Never, like, there isn't a bunch of them that I would say that is on its own would have happened. But because that we found each other, because Everybody Fights, and because we were liked and enjoyed working with a group of individuals that wanted to create unity and growth, that all of a sudden we became so close and your armor broke down of like all the things and your expectation of people and like who they are, just like faded. And you're like, common cause. We love each other. Let's go.
It's so powerful. So it's a great time to jump into our hypothetical. So for one of our listeners out there, let's say they're facing the opportunity to transition from being a peer in their, group of team members to a leader. They've been a high-performing individual contributor. They've now been recognized, like in your story, taken something up to management and said, hey, I want to try something new. And all of a sudden, they're managing their former peers. What are the kind of ideas, considerations that you would be coaching them in?
There's a lot that goes in there, right? Especially with their former peers. There's always a power struggle. People either go complete one side or complete the other side, right? They maintain their best friendship and they fold into different categories of like overpowering, and then that person either folds out or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I would say to the individual, keep in mind this, you have a job to do. And if you look at your job description and you look at what success means to you, work on developing those skill sets. Work on understanding the expectation. Have brief personal conversations with individuals that kind of tread that water. Be honest, be clear. That tread the water of mixing that paint of personal and professional.
Yeah.
Right? Never, ever let it to go in any other direction. Right away, you have to be able to cut that line as soon as you can. That doesn't mean you can't be personable and enjoy yourself outside of a work existence, but the common space changes. The common space changes. And the younger you are, the harder that is to understand, because you can't compartmentalize. When you grow and you get a family and you do that, you have easier time being like, this is my work life, this is my home life,
yes.
These are my closer friends, right? Maybe I have a soccer club, a rugby club I play the game with. So it's easy to compartmentalize. It is not easy when you're 26 years old, you get handed your first leadership role. And it's just coming to that factor of like knowing that they're not your best friends when you're managing them. Mm. And setting true guidelines and having honest, clear conversations ahead of time and not assuming everything's gonna be okay. Like, it's just don't assume. And so like my first piece of that would be that. And then also just go with, and then my other piece I would say to somebody is be kind. Don't walk in with this, I am a superior boss and I'm better than you in that direction.
Yeah.
This should be like, you were chosen because you were talented, but you have yet to show whether you're a leader if you're in your first position. So start to reading, start developing, start surrounding yourself with four other leaders that you want to be. Like, not somebody that's currently equal to you, but maybe choose two or three leaders or mentors that are in your company, another company, a friend's company. Start going out to dinner with them.
Yeah.
Start spending time with them. And I want you to ask a basic question. Do they complain about coworkers? Do they bring up work stuff? Do they have drama that they're spilling and what's going on? I will guarantee you they don't.
Yeah.
And it's like, start to copycat the position you want well ahead of the position you have. And that there will help grow you to like the person you need to be, and not go home and be like, did I say the wrong thing to that person? Mm. Like, that's the worst when you're that young. And probably you and I have been in that situation where like, we're out having drinks with one of our best friends, but we said something that was said in an exec meeting or an upper meeting that we shouldn't have said. And maybe they're putting it together and you're like, I hope not. And then you're like sitting in bed, like, should I call that person and tell them don't share it? You know, we've all sat there. And it's like really setting that tone of that position. And just remember that, the other piece I would say is like, just remember, this is not the last time you're going to be put into this role.
Yeah.
And before taking any of these roles, ask yourself, do you want to be a leader? And do you know what that means?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what that selfless situation actually is being a leader? And what type of leader do you want? Because we can sit here and talk about all types. What type of leader do you want to be recognized at?
Yeah.
But that's important. Like, are you going to be a dictator? Are you going to be, a servant leader? Are you going to walk around and just kind of be a yes man, yes woman? Like, what type of person do you want to go ahead and be? And it should align no differently to the goals that you're trying to achieve in your future.
I love that. No, it's really cool advice, David. And just to play back a couple of those key points, I love the way you say, define what success in the job is, and then have these brief conversations, you know, mix the personal and the professional. I love the vulnerability that comes from that and the way that it kind of sets the stage, sets the story. Mm-hmm. I also think the way that you share about being kind, you know, it is really easy when you get that first promotion to jump in and go, hey guys, we've got to lift productivity in here by 15%, and not ask people, you know, hey guys, what do you see in here that we could be doing better? And being kind and asking for someone's help is actually an indication of strength rather than weakness.
Yeah, and that vulnerability comes back to it, right? Like I loved it sitting in a meeting, be like, I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
This is where we have to get to in order for all of us to get to this. So if let's IBS it. And like, I'm being vulnerable here, guys, because you know what? I don't have the answers, but I know in this room we can get the answers.
Powerful.
And I know we can get to the other side. That piece is so powerful, so powerful. And that sets the tone that everybody has an opportunity to be successful. Everybody has an opportunity to shine. And I always tell people, like, the other piece as a leader is like, make sure that everybody understands that, like, hey, like, if you shine, I'm not taking your credit. Yeah. I won't take your credit ever. I'm going to make sure that you're shining. And when you're shining, if anything, I'm going to go ahead and buff you so you shine better.
Like, that's neat.
That's such an important piece, because there's tons of leaders out there, right? That'll be like, yeah, they're my team, but I take the credit. No, actually, like, even if you did 80 to 90% of the work, you don't get to take the credit. Your team gets to take the credit. And that's just part of life and as being a leader.
Yeah, it's cool. And that final point that you touched on about, you know, going and meeting, you know, four other leaders who are maybe even more advanced from you and learning from them, that outside influence is huge. And like you say, it's a journey. It's not just about nailing it in this role. It's about choosing the leader you're going to be and having the right mentors, role models, influences.
Yeah. You know, I think that's like, it's very interesting, right? Is when you're dealing with, when you're working with any employee, like once you get them to the phase of like, they're at the first level of leadership in some role, right? Like full time. And they're like, all right, what's my growth path? And I always say like never rely on a business or somebody else to dictate your growth path. How about we sit down and talk about what would you like to happen in 5 years?
Yep.
Like, and how can I help get you there? Like, and that's, you know, again, that's always something I'm like, all right, like, I love that. And it might not have to do with everybody fights. It might actually have to do with one of my connections or my ability to make you to give you somewhere here or to, you know, give you some mentorship and then hand you off to a better mentorship.
Yeah.
Like in some category. And that literally is it. And I was like, I talked to people like, you know, all the time about that. Like, where do you want to be in 5 years? And they're like, well, I want to be you, Dave. And I'm like, do you know what it means to be me? Like that. And then I'm like, I love that you want to be me. Like, it's great. But like, what about me, like, to you is shiny that makes you just say, I want to do that. But you have to balance those things. You got to give them realistic views and be like, all right, let's put a plan together. Let's put a plan together and let's get you there. Like, let's get you there. And I can tell you that if we do all things we want to do, you can be me. Like, you can 100% be me. You can be me and better than me. Like, and that's the coolest part about it.
It's super cool. And actually reminds me of one of the things my coach shared with me recently, which is that as individuals in professional settings, we often say what we expect or have been told we should. So like, hey, I want to be like you. I want to be a leader. But actually, they're not listening to what's the truth within them. Maybe to your point, maybe they want to travel the world. Maybe they want to start their own business. Now, a lot of employees are never going to be vulnerable and share that with the boss. Hey, I want to start my own shop. But if you're working in the right team, it's perfectly permittable. In fact, it may even be positive that you're sharing those visions and aspirations.
I think that's one of the most beautiful things when you can be that vulnerable and that open, because there is no, I always call it trap doors. Like, I don't want any employee or any leader or anybody that I am around to feel like they're walking on eggshells. And I just flowed it back to trapdoors. Like, I don't want trapdoors. So I want to know what you're interested in doing. And I want to support that. Like, I want to support that. Even if that means, like, in a year from now, you want to buy a brand new F-150, And I am going to go ahead and ask you, I'm asking you what you're doing. I'm going to help you work on a goal setting. I'm going to reach out to the right bank to work with you different things. I'm going to go ahead randomly when I'm on autotrader.com, send you one, check out this
cool one.
Like that is, because that's what you, that's your aspirations and that's your connection. And you've shared that with me. Like you've shared that with me. Let's talk about it. Right. Mm-hmm. And it could be literally me walking right by you and be like, hey man, you should see the F-150 I saw outside. It's out there. Just because I know that's something that person really wants. And that's like, and it's like, I can share that moment with them, even if it has nothing to do with business, current state, but like them working here, I can help them get to a place where they can see that and they make that first purchase and they do it safely without putting them in a hindered situation.
Yeah. Which is a great way to look at businesses as vehicles for like human growth and unlocking of potential. I love that. So let's move into the lightning round. We've got a few minutes left. Just some quick fire responses here. In your mind, David, what's one thing that separates great teams from good teams?
The foundation of energy, like within the team.
I love that one. Energy is so key. And it's so easy to be complacent about and forget to.
Yeah.
All right. Is it more important for a team to be aligned in purpose or approach?
I think purpose first, because without the North Star, the approach really doesn't matter.
Cool. Love that. How do you handle team conflict productively?
Factually. It's all facts. And if you can take emotion out of it, remove emotion and remove anybody that is emotional and then allow them to come back in and you just go to the facts. And then we honestly speak to the things that bothered us emotionally and the things that actually affected the business so that we can move forward constructively and then learn what triggers us so that we can work better together.
That's cool. I love that fact checking and actually programming in, hey, this is why we get triggered by it. Let's keep an eye out for it. It's a great go forward.
It's just that thought process of learning feedback, effective feedback, et cetera.
Neat. How can a leader ensure that all voices in their team are heard in a team setting?
They don't talk much.
Neat. Lots of listening. That's smart, wise. And finally, what's one piece of advice for someone who feels like an outsider in the team?
Look at your actions. Are you doing the things you hope others would do for you? Are you choosing to be part of the team, or are you sitting on the outside hoping that somebody rings out their hand and pulls you back in? You know, and like that's I think the biggest thing in this world that we judge more than anything. And instead, throw yourself into the fire and test the waters.
Yeah.
Throw yourself in the fire. Don't be afraid of it. Throw it in, see what's going on.
That's super cool. One of my good friends just recently said, when in doubt, you know, focus on who you're serving. And then if you're doing a good job of serving them, everything just starts to fall into gear, which is just a great way to get outside of your own head and think about others.
Yeah, I think that's like so powerful in so many ways, right? It's just like, see who you're serving, but just get out. Like I always talk to people about like, when I'm ever feeling like really destructive in one way or another, I try to pull my soul out of my body.
Yeah.
And I put myself up on a shelf and I let myself play out the action. And I come back to myself on the shelf and I'm like, how did that look?
Yeah.
Like, what did that, was I right? Should I rewrite it? Should I like rewrite my time? It's like time lapse of control, right? And you know, we talk about, you know, when you want to write an email and then you don't send it and you reread it in an hour to see if it's like it problematic. It's the same way I kind of look at it. It's like always in that direction, like what you're trying to get done.
That one's cool. And now with ChatGPT, you don't even need yourself on the shelf. You can just give it a shot there.
Yeah, exactly.
Super cool. All right. Well, that was a good lightning round. And final question. It's been great having this conversation today. As you look forward for the benefit of yourself and the team and all the community members of Everybody Fights, what's one big sort of hope that you have for your teams and all the teamwork you're doing there in that organization?
Well, I think the word I'm going to go ahead and say is growth, right? Yep. I just hope for growth. And I hope for growth not in the direction of just more facilities, more businesses in that category, but I hope for growth for each of the people that we have an opportunity to touch. And that's like my number one goal. I hope growth in a positive way. I hope that we can make change, you know, that we can change the one person at a time, one group at a time, you know, in all these categories is growth, is that hope that I have, you know, for everything we do.
Well, that's neat. Well, I really appreciate your time today, David. I'm looking forward to diving into one of your facilities up there in Boston soon, too.
Absolutely. No, I'm stoked to have you in the city soon, I think, in a few weeks. So by all means, fantastic to be on this today and be able to have conversation. Looking forward to connecting in the future as well.
Neat. Thanks, David.
Thank you for tuning in to today's special Leader Lab episode. Don't forget to check out the show notes and the How Do You Lead exercise. Also, if you're looking for a fuller development program, connect with our team effectiveness or coaching specialists to learn more about your options at leader.com. That's LEAD, the number 3, R.com. Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.